Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Good to have you here. Thank you for stopping by. This is a program for those not only seeking truth and reality, those sick of the BS, tired of the PC garbage with all its artificial social constructs, anti-nature sentiments, psychological and sociological mumbo-jumbo, but also for those who really want to know, learn, understand, break out of the spell, and get to a point where you actually start seeing what is going on and doing something with the knowledge that we learn here. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Götaland, Sweden. This is Red Ice Radio, named so after the Norse creation myth of the primordial elements of fire and ice, heat and cold, the source of the world we are in and the nature that provides. RedIceCreations.com and RedIceMembers.com is our two main websites where you can find a lot more important, interesting, and intrepid investigations into the madness of our times. We do three shows per week. One of these is Radio 314 with Lonai, about every other week or so, well, sometimes a bit more often. Mark Passio is an independent researcher, public speaker, radio talk show host, conference organizer, and freedom activist from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mark has undertaken the task of assembling vast amounts of research in the areas of metaphysics, occultism, spirituality, symbology, and consciousness studies. And this program is a follow-up to the last one we did with Mark on the New Age deception and pacification. We're going to extend the discussion further and explain not only how this neutralizing new religion has been used to quell healthy opposition and rage in response to our subjugation, but also how it has been one of the most successful when it comes to allowing the behavior of the globalists, the political and financial elites, to go unchecked. Responding to this madness by being engaged in it, judging, fighting, and acting in self-defense, and some prefer to call it violence, these are all healthy, natural responses that any alive being on this earth would exhibit. Unless, of course, it suffers from a suicidal psychological disease. We need more of these responses, not less, at a time when universal deceit, lies, and a path of enslavement has been quite openly admitted and laid out for you, your family, and your folk. So the question is, when, if ever, is it time to organize and do something about it? Welcome back, Mark. It's good to have you back once again. Thank you for being here.
Henrik, thanks so much for inviting me back onto the show. It's great to be here.
You bet. We had a really good conversation, a really good show last time you were with us, talking about the detrimental effects of the New Age and the deceptions therein. And there's just so many points of value that I wanted to continue and talk about and expand on and continue our discussion from last time, really, and re-emphasize a lot of the things that we discussed and take it into some new territory as well as a kind of a overall critique, not only of the perhaps alternative, we can call it that, but also the lack of engagement and things that have been weaved into this kind of subculture that I believe have actually diverged a lot of people off in the wrong direction and actually from a lack of doing something about a lot of the problems that we face. But I want to begin to ask you a little bit, what kind of response have you been getting on what you've been doing in this department? Do people, have they responded, you know, fairly good to it, or is there a lot of backlash, maybe even from peaceful pacifists themselves that have responded violently towards you for critiquing the follies and detrimental ideology that is within the New Age?
That's a great question, Henrik. And it really has been received very well and much better than I even ever expected it to be received. The people who really get what I'm saying have had a very positive reaction to the message and the presentations that I've put out there on this topic. It seems as if the people who are still deeply ensconced in the false New Age religion take the approach of ignoring anything that falls outside of their little narrow scope of their belief system. So in many cases, I think the people that have tried to get, that really get what I'm saying, okay, have had a very positive outlook toward it and have tried to bring this to people who they know who are still trapped in the belief system of the New Age movement. And they've had very little success doing that because, again, it seems like their attitude is anything that sounds negative to me, or anything that, contradicts with my pre-existing belief system with these new age deceptions that I talk about, then that has to be completely ignored and completely tuned out of my awareness. And that seems to be, where we have fallen, the line that has been drawn. It's like the people who were already kind of either on the fence or kind of already getting that there was a subtle deception taking place in their midst regarding this religion, got it right away and had a very positive reaction toward the information. But the people who are deeply ensconced and ensnared by this religion seem to not want to have anything to do with information that conflicts with their pre-existing belief system that is holding them back from understanding how really they have fallen into a trap. So that's kind of really still where we stand. And hopefully, people can move forward with this information and, elucidate it to some of these people who are unfortunately in a place that I would consider absolutely a spiritual trap, for lack of a better term, and really get them to see some reason about the belief system that they've fallen for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of components to this, a lot of things we want to get into. Actually, a little bit later, I want to ask a little bit more about New Age paganism. We've been talking about going back to, traditionalism to a certain extent and going back into our ancient European records and look for, where we come from and all that kind of stuff as well, and how that also has been kind of hijacked. But before I talk about that, this is some of this kind of stuff, though, has been, I'd say, going mainstream as well in the last few years, really. I mean, this is kind of the stuff that we've seen sneaking into the, Oprah-style talk shows. Yes. And we see a lot of this now kind of being sentiments of this being reemphasized in, on TV shows. And sure, there's an element of ridicule there still to a certain degree. But I can see that it's creeping in there. And I would say at this stage, I should say, Mark, it's almost more of a worrying element that this is going to go explode into the mainstream, as opposed to now when the alternative is kind of, I guess, nudging its way out and away a little bit from this, right?
Yes, and I would say that that's part of the control agenda. That's part of the control system agenda. They'll look for useful idiots who will propagate part of this agenda unknowingly because they actually have bought into it and believe the lie. As we said, this is really all about getting the masses to stand down. If anything, it is a religion that essentially propagates the notion that one can never take any physical action when someone is actually oppressing you. That's ultimately what the New Age comes down to.
Yeah.
That, you can never act in self-defense. You can never really act on your own. It's just, all about wishing for things, all about, putting an intention forward, all about, doing energy work, in the spiritual world. But when it comes to actually affecting real world change, taking real world action to create real world change, the New Age's movement as a whole is essentially silent about that. And again, I'm not trying to make a blanket statement there. I'm saying as the general direction of the tenets of this movement go, action is left at the doorstep, and it is just completely ignored. So the control system loves this dynamic because they don't want anybody opposing them. They don't want anybody challenging them. They certainly don't want anybody taking action against them. So they want this religion firmly entrenched in the population because it makes the population docile. It is like literally like a new form of an opiate for the masses because it is the new religion. It's the new religion for the new covert control system. Yeah. You need a religion to go hand in hand with the control system because the control system is the left brain imbalanced component of the psychological imbalance of the masses, and the religion of essentially standing down and not really taking any action and allowing slavery to just persist and continue indefinitely is the right brain imbalanced psychological dynamic that is entrenched in the masses. You get those two playing off against each other and you can continue the covert control system perpetually.
Well, exactly. I think I would like to call it, turning the other cheek extremism or something like that,
Sure.
It's like this idea. I mean, to a large extent, this is something that I believe in a way has been nudged into the population through Christianity, for example, that through these kind of Catholic and universalist kind of ideologies, we've seen the disease, really, in my opinion, of monoculture creep further and further in there. And all the innate natural systems that have been part of humankind for thousands and thousands of generations that we've been brought up in, that have been part of the components in our surrounding world based on, you know, the natural geography in some cases, the climactic differences between, you know, different areas of the world, right, things that we've learned from in nature. That's really where the severance have begun, in my opinion. And this step in the process, just as you've kind of clarified already, the New Age ideologies is just a continuation and kind of the final nail in the coffin of this beast, Mark.
It's a huge divide and conquer strategy. Again, it's taking, you know, certain people who agree with control and coercion and violence and will follow orders and do those things, setting them up on one side of the population as so-called, you know, people who are in positions of authority and control. And then you have all these other people who look at themselves as essentially, we are not allowed to take action. We are just there to set an intention or wish for something and never actually challenge the concept of the total illegitimacy of authority, the total illegitimacy of coercion, the total illegitimacy of violence. And in effect, what you have with this religion is people who are saying that they're moral individuals, saying that they want good things for humanity, but never willfully or upfront taking a stance, even in a verbal way, to oppose, to ideologically oppose the violence system, the violent system that is basically has humanity in its clutches. It won't come forward and say no.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate bottom line when it comes to this. That's the goal. They want a population that is compliant. And you need to give people religion that basically tells them you cannot ever use defensive force to say no. And then back that no with some kind of teeth to basically say, my rights belong to me. They are a birthright gifted to me by the universe itself. No one has the right to take those rights away. And if you come and try to take those rights away, I will stand firm in the truth, stand firm upon my ground of that I have natural rights that aren't granted to me by men and women or groups of men and women or governments. And I will use whatever amount of defensive force required to defend those rights because they are not yours to take away from me.
Yeah.
This is what this religion makes it next to impossible for any of the people who are trapped in it to ever say. And that is exactly the kind of controlled opposition, or, you know, what you might call playing two sides off against each other in the form of you have the violence system on one side and the system of never opposing violence on the other side that is ultimately going to bring about the synthesis that the world controllers, the world mind controllers really want to see.
Yeah, the positive aspect to not only self-defense in action is rarely discussed, but yes, folks, I would go so far to say violence in the most natural way. If you think about it, everything in nature has this innate in them, and all the functions of natural responses within us has been attempted to be, domesticated out of us, for the lack of a better term, bred out, that we have certain set of, even the basic, conception, Mark, of being prejudiced, let's say. Yeah, we published an article about this on the website a while back about how this actually was an evolutionary function for mankind to determine danger, and it seems like the wishes to, let's say, self-sacrifice oneself again for the greater good. This is really for the sake of not potentially hurting someone's feelings, but for the potentiality of losing your own life. And this, it's gone into overdrive. This kind of anti-natural kind of association to life and reality and nature and everything else. And this basic thing is part of that control mechanism I see. And I see, from political correctness to cultural Marxism to all of these, the full spectrum here is a full-on assault on our natural, propensities that we have within us, Mark.
It's absolutely anti-nature. That's what this agenda is. It's anti everything that someone has within them that is about any kind of self-preservation. And I'm not saying go into the total left brain imbalance of pure selfishness and putting self-preservation above everything, including morality. But when you lose the instinct to defend yourself, you know, I'll just give you an anecdote real quick. I mean, in many workplaces throughout the city of Philadelphia and in many other cities throughout the country, they're victim disarmament zones. You yeah. cannot bring any kind of a defensive weapon with you into that environment. You know, in many college campuses, it's the entire campus that someone is not allowed to be armed or bring a weapon into. And that sets up a victim disarmament zone. And what they indoctrinate people to accept and believe is the right thing to do is if there's ever anybody who is wielding a weapon or, you know, some type of an active shooter in that environment, you hide and try to make yourself as concealed as possible until the quote-unquote authorities yep, show up and yep. handle the situation. Imagine telling people you have no right to defend yourself anymore. And I can't even believe people continue to accept this as something that is legitimate. I can't believe that people who buy into this right brain nonsense actually believe that you don't have a right to defend yourself with force if you're accosted with violence.
Yeah.
You know, how could they think that setting up a victim disarmament zone is in any way better than having everybody simply arm themselves and understand how to use that particular weapon that they choose to arm themselves with? So if some lunatic does come into that environment, people would be ready to basically put that person down if need be.
That's right.
You know, it would be just makes so much more sense. You're going to let this person go and kill multiple more people on a rampage because nobody in the whole vicinity is armed. And they can't even see the simple common sense logic of that because they're so in a state of essentially they're held in thrall, really. This is a absolute mind control technique to get people to believe they do not possess a right that they actually do possess.
Yeah.
And, you know, people actually buy into this and think that it's somehow kind of a good thing for their own protection. You're basically telling somebody your only option is to hide and hope that someone who is intending violence doesn't see you. And then what are you going to do when they do? Nothing. You're going to basically be prepared to die. That's about it. And I can't understand how anybody could think that that's a good idea, but yet there's tons of people out there that do.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, this is what's so oxymoronic in this situation, that it actually, the lack of basically putting your foot down, you know, speaking up against something initially, is actually causing and creates a much worse kind of violence in the end if this goes unchecked.
That's right.
I mean, we saw this, for example, in the that island outside of Oslo when Anders Behring Breivik, you know, managed to murder 77 people. Basically, sure, there were some, you know, younger people there and whatnot, but there were also some, you know, adults, and there was a security guard who was not armed, etc. But basically, where everyone runs and hid. And as many people as possible could take out instead of a majority of those, you know, quote, men, unquote, if we can call them that, would charge right. this gentleman and actually take care of business, right? So right. it's kind of, it's not only, you know, violence by proxy, really, where later on the state comes in and kind of tries to, with its own violence, solve the violence that occurred, but it's actually about creating much worse conditions in the long term, yes. as opposed to taking that difficult, perhaps, hit in the short term, but to kind of settle the score right away, you know?
They're giving people, they're setting up a situation where a much worse scenario can play itself out so that people will then perceive the violence that is inherent in the state as being required or necessary. That's really what this whole psychological warfare tactic of disarming victims is all about. And, you know, I want to just make it very clear and just make a statement here regarding people who don't believe in self-defense or don't believe that people should be allowed to be armed. Not even grasping the self-defense principle in and of itself is ideological support for violence,
yes.
indirectly.
Yes.
Not grasping the self-defense principle is ideological support for violence, because what you're basically saying is, only a certain group of people have the ability to wield defensive force. And then essentially that creates a monopoly on defensive force. A monopoly like that always, always gets converted into violence. And the people who think that that's how it should be are actually people who think that violence is acceptable. They are giving their ideological support indirectly for the violence that comes down from the controllers of a system, the so-called controllers of a system. See, you know, there's a simple meme that's going around the internet these days that has a simple three-step pyramid, a three-tiered pyramid. At the top, you have a little, top pyramidion section of the pyramid that basically has a label on it that says rulers. And then underneath that, there's a larger section, but not drastically larger than the top portion of the pyramid. And it says violence, or people who are willing to commit violence. And then underneath that, there's the huge base of this pyramid, and it says ideological support for violence. And that's really the world that we live in, you know. And this religion, the New Age religion of standing down, not taking any real world action, not grasping or accepting that there is such a thing as the right to defend oneself when one is accosted with violence, is that whole base of the pyramid. It is what is building that ideological support for violence. And these are some of the first people that would tell you, no, I don't agree with violence. I don't think that violence should exist. Well, then if you don't believe that violence should exist, the very, very first thing that you should understand, in addition to the non-aggression principle, is the self-defense principle. Because self-defense is not violence. I have constantly tried to explain to people, mm-hmm. if someone were to accost you on the street and try to rob you or pulled out a weapon and threatened you with that weapon, that is an act of violence. If you responded with self-defense, that is not a second act of violence. This is an indoctrination technique to tell people that you're responding to violence with violence. No, you would not be responding to violence with violence were you to have be armed yourself and then take your weapon out and protect yourself in a self-defensive capacity against that first act of violence. Only one act of violence would have taken place, and it would have been on the part of the criminal that originally accosted you. If you responded with defensive force, it would not have been an act of violence. Only the proper and rightful use of defensive force to protect yourself and or your property. And when people hear this, one of the first arguments that New Agers or other right-brained individuals will have regarding that stance is, oh, you think that the argument goes something like this. You think that someone's life isn't worth as much as the property that you may have on you, or the money that you may have on you, or the jewelry that you may have on you. No, I never said that. Because what really is going on in this instance is someone is essentially saying that I am willing to threaten your life. That's the thing you're defending against. Mm-hmm. You're not defending your property or your money. Okay, you could, if you decided, you know, even say the money's not worth even what might happen to me or this other person. But that's your choice to make, because you don't know where it's going to stop. You don't know whether that person would just brandish a knife or a gun to threaten you and to get what he wants and then leave. There's been many instances where somebody has taken out a weapon, taken the thing they want off the person, and then killed them anyway to try to get them not to talk to the police or whatever, inform anybody about what they just did to them. So you don't know where it would stop. It is about the fact that someone would dare to steal something from you, put your own life in jeopardy, and the lack of self-respect that it takes to do an act like that, and the lack of respect for anybody else's life that it takes to do something like that. That is why that the proper response would be to defend yourself with force. And it's also to set an example for anybody else that would try to do something like that. It is a show of strength, and it is a show of right to stand within your right to defend yourself. It doesn't mean engage in total retribution or total vengeance ideology. It means in that moment, you have a right to physically defend yourself. Now, you could extend this and say, when it comes to something like duress, where does the right come in to physically defend yourself from duress? Mm-hmm. Because are we not all living under duress right now? You know, is the threat, the continued threat of violence being done against you if you do not comply, is that not the state of duress? You know, if somebody says you will do this perpetually, or if you stop doing this, like for something like, let's say, taxation, okay, then we will come for you. You know, this is the implied threat, and that's a threat of duress. They're saying you must continuously comply with our demands, whatever we say those demands are, and no matter how they change. We might say we want 30% of your earnings this week, and then next month we might say we want 40 or 50, and if you can't afford it, we'll come for your property or we'll come for your person. This is the kind of duress that we're under. That's an active state of violence. But people do not see it like that. They don't see that that's an duress is an active state of violence. I give people the example when it comes to this dynamic. And this is all about the sacred masculine, exercising the sacred masculine aspect. This is what is missing in the people who are the adherents of the New Age movement. I give people the example. If you were kidnapped, the kidnapper doesn't have to continuously be doing physical acts of violence against your person for that entire duration while you were being held against your will to be a continuous act of violence in the form of duress. You know, at what point would you have, at what point would you have the right to do something physical, to put down the actions of an active kidnapping? I would say for as long as the active kidnapping continues,
yeah,
for as long as that person is doing the kidnapping. So, you know, you could look at another example of a slave owner back in the Civil War period America, a slave owner on a plantation with slaves that are being put to work brutally, being, you know, whipped to do that work, being held in treacherous and horrific conditions against their will, worked like pack animals or something like that. And they are basically put out in a shed at night in the field, if not laying out in the field and completely open to the elements. At what point would any of those slaves being kept in that plantation have a right to physically defend themselves by taking physical action against the so-called master of that plantation? Would it be okay to do it while they were being whipped? Would it be okay to do it if they were not being whipped and just wanted to go into the house and basically put those people down because of the actions that they had already done to even capture them and hold them there in duress against their will, even if they were in bed at night? I would say you would have the right to do it at any point. You would have a right to take that physical action for as long as that condition of slavery was in effect. And people can't see it like that for some reason. They don't understand the state of duress because, again, like you said, they've been something that is natural within them, this self-preservation instinct within them has been bred out of them chronically over time through a belief system. And this is what chronic right-brained imbalance does. Chronic right-brained imbalance essentially roots the person's thoughts, emotions, and personality in the limbic brain. The limbic brain is the part of the brain that essentially makes emotion possible and generates the chemicals in the brain that go into the bloodstream to make us feel emotion in the body. When the right brain is over chronically stimulated and there's no left brain stimulation, meaning there's no real world action, there's no true logic, there's no standing up for oneself, there's no engaging in the survival mechanism aspects of daily life, and you're constantly in a right brain state, constantly in your deep thoughts, constantly in the imagination, constantly in just the creative side. And I'm not saying any of those things are unimportant. They are all very tremendously important. But when you're constantly, chronically in that right brain state without any balance of the left brain state, the limbic brain basically takes over and it shuts down not only the higher thought processes, the truly higher thought processes of conscience, morality, true ethics, the understanding of rights, you know, the understanding of both the sacred feminine principle of non-aggression and the sacred masculine principle of self-defense. It shuts down, all importantly, the R complex of the brain, which is necessary and required for the survival of the individual and for the protection of the individual. The R complex is the reptilian brain. And people look at it like, oh, it's just a bad part of the brain. No, it isn't. No. It's a very valued and functional and required part of the brain, because we live in a physical world where there are dangers present and inherent in the physical world that we live in. And we need to be able to defend ourselves when the time comes to do so, when we are actively under physical threat immediate in the immediate sense, or under duress, which is the actively implied threat that is continuously applied and continuously, you know, we are threatened with violence if we do not comply with somebody else's demands or commands. So the if we don't have the our complex engaged, we are going to become a person that stands down when confronted with any form of violence and basically rolls over, like a dog that's been conditioned or kicked and, you know, has just given up on its will to basically have a life where it isn't violently accosted, and it just will roll over. This is what this religion is all about doing. It's putting people in that super right brain imbalanced mindset to where they're ruled by the emotions, and they're ruled by just the imaginative side of the personality and the creative side of the personality, often thinking up many scenarios and things that, about the way things could be or should be, but they never actually convert that into real world action by doing something to make it happen. And they think that's somehow pushing something or doing something that's unnatural. That this is another illusion and deception in the New Age movement. You don't want to make anything happen. If it's meant to be, it will happen, or it will just happen naturally.
Right. Yeah.
And this is dismissive of will. See, willpower, action, doing things in the real world, making something occur by your own will. These are things that are completely dismissed by the New Age movement, because it's all about chronic right brain imbalance, standing down, letting the emotions run away, letting the right side of the brain run away unchecked, and not actually engaging any of the logical or the survivalistic mechanisms of the left brain, which both have to be in balance with each other. Neither is more important than the other, but if we lose that balance and slip into this state of chronic imbalance, we end up with a population of people who are willing slaves, who are willing to be slaves perpetually.
Well, exactly. There's so many good points of what you mentioned here. I mean, it's like there are a couple of in paganism within Asatru that we've been looking at lately, and old Nordic folk belief systems. You know, there is this very idea that it's a self-preservation, as you said, not only of ourselves, but of our people, of our folk. I mean, it's this one good quote: "We are only the sum of our actions. Our deeds build the mold of the hammer worn by generations still to come." So it's actually a very, it's not a selfish thing, but it's actually, it expands into the greater circle of the human, folk, you know, the people that we have around us. I mean, and this is, the same goes for the, you know, anti-ego mumbo jumbo as well, that we have to let go of the ego. You know, this is to dismantle the realization that there is a threat against us out there. And I think that this is very, very, very good for the controlling elements within our society to realize that they've completely managed to dismantle this innate ability to recognize a threat and decide to do something about it. I mean, I think people have to realize that the world has been shaped by violence. I mean, ultimately, no matter what people think, a fist in the face is going to speak louder and stronger than any other, you know, placards or campaigning or politics or voting or what have you. And again, the world we live in today has been shaped by this kind of violence, for good or for bad. It's a product of it. But what we have now is that we have a few rotten eggs, basically, the psychopathic element within our society, as some like to call it, the elite, the globalist, what have you. They have taken advantage of this. And of course, while there is a belief that less violence from the people on the other side of this equation, that somehow is going to lead and create a better world, folks. I mean, ultimately, if good men and women stood up to the tyranny with the innate ability that we have to defend ourselves and realize that there is a threat against us and our people with violence, we would be in a much different world today, Mark.
I would just say, I would only amend, instead of with violence, with defensive usage of force, which is within our rights to do so. Mm-hmm. I just don't call that violence, because I try to disambiguate these two terms, because too many people use them interchangeably. Violence is not physical. defensive force, and physical defensive force is not violence. Only when you're using force in a way that you don't have a right to use it does it become violence. And that's what the system is doing against the people. If the people were to use defensive force to put down that violence, it would not be a second act of violence. I ask people, did the revolutionaries in the American Revolution engage in violence? And most people will insist that they did. And I'm telling you, they absolutely did not. There was not one act of violence on the part of people who want to free themselves from tyranny. There is no such thing as an act of violence being conducted on their part. Yeah. I don't care how many British soldiers they shot with their muskets. No act of violence was committed on the part of those revolutionaries, as long as it was directed toward those British soldiers that were here on this land. Every act of violence was done by those soldiers by even coming here. And the same is true with the control system today. The violence is all on one side. It's all against the people. If someone were to use defensive force to stop themselves from violence being conducted against them, that would not be a retaliatory act of violence. It would be a retaliatory act, but it would be an act of self-defense. And this is what people have to clearly get into their mind, because what the religion of the New Age being employed by these controllers has done is it has destroyed people's discernment and judgment capability.
Yeah.
They cannot discern between these two modalities of action. They think that they're the same. This is part of what they're trying deliberately to break down. They don't want anybody to really have keen discernment capabilities. They don't want anybody to have the ability to truly judge the difference between things.
Yeah.
Again, that's a survival mechanism. You know, this is a defensive mechanism that is built into humanity to be able to tell the differences between things that are good for you and things that will harm you or set you back in your progression in consciousness as well, in your spiritual progression.
Yep.
And the people who buy into this religion don't have spiritual discernment, and they frown upon the term judgment. They think that we should never judge anything. This is one of the big New Age deceptions. Don't judge, you know? And when you don't judge something, you're basically saying, I'm not going to actually use the process of truth discovery to compare and contrast things and say, this is what is preferable. This is what is good. This is what will move my evolutionary progress forward in consciousness. And this is what can harm me. This is what can do harm not only to myself, but my species. This is what will hold us back if we stay attached to this notion or idea or allow this action that is harmful to continue. And that's exactly what these controllers want. They want the destruction of discernment. They want the destruction of judgment. And they want people standing down at all times and places to make it just much more easy for them to bring in their system of 100% total tyranny, which thankfully, because enough people, mainly here in the United States, still do understand the right of self-defense, they haven't been able to move forward with that total control agenda as quickly or effectively as they want. This country has been acting as one of the last stumbling blocks in their plan, because they have not been successful in disarming the American population, who they consider their slaves. See, the main tenet people have to understand when it comes to self-defense is an unarmed people are an enslaved people. Only slaves are not allowed to defend themselves. If someone else is telling someone you are not allowed to defend yourself with whatever amount of force is required to defend yourself, by definition, that being is someone else's slave, and they are their master. It all comes down to that, and people will say, oh, that's some kind of an extreme point of view. It's very simple logic. If you cannot defend yourself, but somebody else can defend themselves or do violence through weapons, through their possession of weapons, by definition, you're already living under tyranny, and those individuals who are armed are already your masters.
Yeah,
you know, an unarmed population is an enslaved population.
That's just how it goes, you know, it's just how it is. And I can't believe that we're, you know, kind of even having that as a talking point. But I mean, even
that it
in
needs
regards
to be enunciated is a sad factor.
It is, you know, a sad state. Yeah.
And so many people in this religion, you know, still defend gun control. They still defend. It's like they're actually giving a a talk, a campaign for their actual enslavers. When you really understand how the dynamic really is, you know, the people who stand against any kind of gun ownership or the ownership of any defensive weapons, period, they are actually taking up the position of the very people who consider themselves their masters. And when you see the inherent illogical position in that, it becomes something that is so sad, because that person is so seemingly completely broken. And I mean that in the literal sense of the term, like when someone breaks an animal, breaks a horse, it's the spirit being broken, and they're resolved to their slavery. They no longer try to rebel. They no longer even have the spirit of rebellion within them, you know, and that's really exactly where they brought most people with this religion. So,
let me just mention one thing there as well, because I think, to be fair, Mark, as well, I would say this is now aspects that are part of all of our modern so-called Western democracy. I don't think we have to go to the New Age to see that this has been manifested in this way. This idea of no self-preservation, kind of an innate, I mean, ultimately, this it is a self-hatred, ultimately. This might, of course, be on a kind of an unconscious level, so it might not be an awareness that people have. But ultimately, a desire not to protect yourself, your family, right, or, you know, your friends or your community, whatever, that's a hatred against yourself, actually. Anti-life.
I have an anecdote for that. I won't mention the name, so not as to embarrass the person, but a individual who my wife Barb works with. When gun ownership came up in a topic of discussion, basically said, instead of ever picking up a gun or defending myself with physical force through a weapon, I would let anybody who attacked me take my life.
Wow.
And I'm just like, how could anybody have that level of the lack of self-respect? There's nothing spiritual in that. There's nothing, you know, that is inherently good in that approach. And this person has children who I'm referring to.
Wow.
And so Barb responded, "What about your children?" And she said, "I wouldn't take any action to do any quote unquote violence," using the term in the wrong way, "against anybody, regardless of who was threatened." So think about that. You'd let a psychopath run rampant, and not knowing where that act is going to stop. You would not take any physical action to actually try to stop somebody. And, you know, that is a state of self-loathing, if there ever was one. You know, that person is not in a state of self-love, certainly not in any kind of a state of spiritual knowledge about what your rights are or what your rights are not, you know. But it's more than that. I would say that person is in a state of self-loathing. They truly don't love themselves. They can't love themselves if that's their position, you know. And this is really where they do have much of the population. I mean, I watched this allegorical film called Goodbye World the other night, which was about what would happen in the event of a power grid failure that was caused by, terrorist hackers, okay, to take down the power grid. Everybody's without power, and now they're competing against each other for resources and food, etc. And the people who the movie is centered around are anti-gun ownership. They don't own guns. When one of his friends brings a gun into the house, he's like, goes all into a rage. How dare you bring a firearm into my home, you know? But then people with guns show up to try to take their resources, and they're absolutely powerless to defend themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, it would be great if there was a world without any weaponry. It would be great if there was a world where all the people had the ideology that violence is inherently illegitimate and should never be engaged in. Unfortunately, that's an illusion that does not exist. That's only a belief system in someone's mind at this present point. Right now,
it's a naivety. People are they don't realize the situation of the nature of the world that they're living in. Again, this is like a modern concept of what it should be. It's a moral, you know, compass that's been enforced upon them, I'd say, in the last, 50, 60, 70
that's
years,
right,
maybe, you know?
I give people the example as well, Henrik. Even if you eradicated all violence from the earth, Does that mean you should absolutely destroy every defensive weapon that exists on the earth?
Of course not.
Who knows what threats are in the universe to our advancement or survival? You don't know what kind of state of consciousness other beings that we may encounter at some point in the future ever have. So I wouldn't ever say disarm yourself. The right of a people in a physical world, in any physical reality, is a right to defend themselves with physical force. It's just an inherent part of nature. You know, this is why we even have nails and teeth and the ability to wield our limbs. You know, we wouldn't even be able to do that if this wasn't.
And we have a brain as well, Mark, as our biggest defense mechanism. That's why mankind has invented tools and hammers and weapons and, everything of it.
And again, this is simply a tool. I wouldn't advocate going and doing anything violent with it. The firearms that I own are tools. They are tools for my self-defense, the self-defense of the people I love and care about. And, it's a tool. It depends on who wields it, whether it's going to be used in violence or in defense. I would never wield any of my firearms in violence against any being. You know, the firearms that I possess are purely for self-defensive purposes, and that is my right to wield a firearm if I am threatened with violence. You know, that is a self-defensive right. And the people who think that it's not or want to go and, make a huge issue, like in most major cities in the United States, defending yourself with a firearm, even if you are accosted with a firearm, ends up in a lengthy trial because prosecutors tried to say it wasn't necessary for him to use that. They actually want to try to take the right of preservation, the self-defense preservation of your own life when you're accosted with violence, often with another deadly weapon. They want to take that away from people, and people have to be vigilantly on guard that is never taken away from people. See, what this ultimately comes down to is this idea of the New Age movement, the New Age religion, is not something that is new. This is a very old thing, and this has been going on. This kind of ideology has been injected into the human population for millennia. The rulers have always wanted to condition their slaves that they do not have a right to defend themselves. That's the definition of a slave. I'll do what I want with your body, and you won't respond. You won't do anything to stop me from doing that. That's what a master wants in a compliant slave population. And you have to understand that this religion has existed for thousands, tens of thousands of years in different forms. It just comes down to us in the modern day as what we call the New Age movement. And, in my New Age BS presentation, I talked about all the deceptions that were inherent in this movement, and we listed them on the last show that we did. We went through all the individual subtle deceptions that are contained in this movement, in this religion. And one of the things that I didn't really get into is that there are many things that it does postulate that we could talk about and clarify that are true, and there's a positive side of it, but I call this the factors for true awakening. You know, how is true awakening different than what is being taught in the New Age movement? They're in some ways similar, and then there's many subtle differences that really make true awakening something altogether different than what enlightenment or awakening is deemed or just called in the New Age circles. So I was thinking maybe we could go through some of those factors or those characteristics of what true awakening is in a true spiritual sense, what I call streetwise spirituality. Spirituality that integrates not only the sacred feminine and the right brain aspects, the compassionate, the creative, the imaginative aspects of the personality, but also integrates the streetwise factors, the sacred masculine component, the left brain, the logical side, the defensive side, etc. And again, as we said before, both of these aspects or components of the consciousness have to be operating in unison, in tandem, in a sacred union to have balance.
Yes.
So maybe that's something that we could do in the second part of the broadcast, is go through these factors of what I call true awakening as opposed to the New Age variant of enlightenment.
Well, exactly. That's a really good point, and I think that'd be good to do that. We have a little bit time left here in the first, and I think that'll be a little longer segment. So let's save on that. Let me bring something else into the equation here as well, because My predicament here is to try to also kind of weave in what we're seeing happening now in the political and you know, within the democracies and everything else, because I mean, definitely it is within the New Age, and I think it actually stems from there due to some of the things I'll just reiterate here quickly. But it's, I mean, let's be honest about it. This is sneaking into the politically correct ideology. This is being pushed all over the Western world. And for those who have done their homework, they know that this comes out of, you know, cultural Marxism, the Frankfurt School, etc. But if you go further back even to some of the gradualist, you know, societies like the Fabian Socialist Society, they're actually very interesting to see that they're in their early days. A lot of the thinkers of this actually were steeped in New Age spirituality. They had, for example, even the I think it was the New Statesman who actually the magazine that is you know, coming out of the London School of Economics, which in turn comes directly out of the Fabian Society. Same people, same money.
That magazine is also directly connected to the House of Rothschild.
That's right. Exactly. And out of that kind of environment, we've had in the early days, a lot of the people there were heavily steeped in spiritualism. There were even like stories of some of the founders of the Fabian Society. Right. They were out kind of ghost hunting and looking into, like, they had magazines and publications called the New Age and other kind of variations of that terminology. Right. So it's something that actually has, it's gone in two different directions later on. It's split up in those early days in the late 1800s, early 1900s. But now they're kind of coming together again, I see, where we see, you know, gradualism, Fabian Society, political correctness, cultural Marxism is going into this kind of New Age environment again. Right. Very interesting, you know?
I mean, that's essentially what was put forward by the Frankfurt School and people like Antonio Gramsci to make a long march through the cultural institutions in order to wield a silent revolution, a revolution that would be done ideologically instead of with weapons. But part of that would be to break down the self-defensive mechanism that is normally inherent in a free and moral people. To basically get them to believe that they don't have rights, which they do. And all that is done to basically put the ability to wield force as a monopoly in the hands of the state, which is what all communist and other totalitarian, including fascist forms of government, want to do. They all meet at the same place, essentially, whether you're looking at a so-called left-wing communist totalitarian form of government or a so-called right-wing totalitarian form of government like fascism. They meet at the same place, and that's 100% power in the hands of the state and the people basically being disarmed slaves. If you could tell me how communism and fascism are not the same in those respects, I'd like to hear it, because they're identical. It's just a matter of how one looks at them on a political spectrum or in a, from a political perspective. But in effect, in the de facto real world, they are identical in what they actually accomplish. So these political movements that you're talking about absolutely use the New Age religion as a tool to their advantage, because, again, they are trying to set themselves up as the ruling class of society, as the masters of a new neo-feudalism, essentially, where you know, no one else owns property. The state owns everything, and the party that runs the state, or so-called parties, you know, we all know that, of course, a multiple party system is really one party behind the scenes. So the members of the party would end up as the oligarchical ruling class, and the rest of the people would be the new serfs living on the land that they don't own and with no ability to actually defend themselves from the violence ideology that's inherent in the state and run and controlled by the party. This is what all totalitarian regimes since the dawn of time have attempted to do, and they use religion greatly to their ideological benefit in controlling the minds of the masses in order to put them into that state of standing down and not taking any action against them.
Yep, you're right. Very good. This is about you know, globalism and internationalism and everything else as well, creating that kind of real upper layer crust of the you know, the inner party, as it were. But we have a lot more to discuss here, Mark. We're gonna, when we return, we're gonna talk more about as you mentioned, that streetwise spirituality. I have a lot of other points I want to ask you about too as well, that connects with, you know, some of the more spiritual components of the New Age and how that also is influencing people with some of the you know, kind of that this is backed up by science and stuff like that. I want to get your take on that. But Before we take a break, though, let's give out some of the details about your work, Mark, and where people can go and check out more stuff. You have a talk on demystifying the occult coming up, so tell us about that as well.
Yeah, first of all, my main website is whatonearthishappening.com. You can go to that website. There's a huge body of information and knowledge presented there. I always tell people go to the podcast section for the deepest tapestry of information that's presented on that site, and go back to number one and listen to the podcast, the What on Earth is Happening podcast, in order from number one forward, because it's a tapestry of interconnected information that has prerequisite knowledge in the earliest podcast that I then build upon for later shows. So that's something I always recommend to people. Also, I'll be giving a seminar, live all-day seminar in Connecticut, in Manchester, Connecticut, on Saturday, October 4th of this year. It's going to be all day from 9 a.m. on, and it's called Demystifying the Occult. And in it, I'm going to basically explore the world of occult knowledge and its symbols. I'm going to talk about what the occult actually is compared to what people think of it as. I'm going to explain why people should know about the occult, what the knowledge that comprises it actually is, how that knowledge is used by the people who hold that knowledge, how it's different than what is traditionally looked at as spiritual beliefs or mysticism. And we're going to get into symbolism in a big way in it. I'm going to break down a lot of different occult symbols. And in the second part, I'm going to give kind of like my take on the symbolism of the major arcana of the tarot deck as a case study in occult symbolism, and help to explain to people what the symbols on those cards really represent, and how deep of knowledge about the self and the universe is actually preserved in the symbolism, in the wordless symbolism of those cards. So that's going to be in the second half of that presentation. You could check out the details of that on my website. Again, it's at the Manchester History Center in Manchester, Connecticut, on Saturday, October 4th, starting at 9 a.m. So hopefully people in that area will come out, and we'll have a very enlightening day talking about the occult and the symbols that basically communicate the knowledge of the occult. So that's the next big event that I have coming forward. I also have I've been working on my first book with an editor, and hopefully I'm going to probably be releasing that in the early part of next year, so people can look forward to that as well. In the meantime, they could check out my audio and video series at whatonearthishappening.com, my main website.
Very good. Check out the Demystifying the Occult upcoming lecture there as well. We'll link up to Mark's website from ours, and also heads up on the new book there, and check everything out that he has upcoming. Okay, Mark, stay with us. We'll be right back after a short break.